Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Joshua chapter 14, verses 1 through 15. I'll entitle this section, The Inheritance West of the Jordan. Our context is this. In the previous chapter, chapter 13, we looked at the land that still remained to be conquered on the east of the Transjordan. So we start now in verse 1 of Joshua 14. Now, these are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel apportioned to them for an inheritance. Now, there are three people doing the apportioning here. There's Eleazar the priest. He was the third son of Aaron. The first two sons, you might recall, Nadab and Abihu, were executed by the Lord for the strange fire incident when they offered strange fire on the altar. And so Eleazar was the functioning high priest now. Eleazar was the third son of Aaron. Ithamar was the fourth. He will take over when Eleazar dies. Eleazar is the currently serving high priest. And he's mentioned before Joshua, probably, because Eleazar is the spiritual leader. This matter is going to be determined by lot, who's going to get what land, and God controls the lot. So this was a spiritual matter. He's mentioned even before Joshua is the political leader, the military leader. Also, along with Eleazar and Joshua, the heads of the 12 tribes, or the 10 tribes, excuse me. One, I say 10 because remember, Gad and Reuben are on the other side of the Jordan, and they're not involved in this. Half Manasseh is over there too, but there's another half of Manasseh on the west, so that makes 10 tribes that have to be have a leader. Joshua 13:7 says this, "Now therefore apportion this land for an inheritance to the 9 tribes and the half tribes of Manasseh." So there's your 10. Now these guys were appointed about 7 years earlier, we're assuming, and we're going to show you in a minute that it's pretty easy to show that it took 7 years to conquer the land. Conquer as much of the land as they did before they did the apportionment. But these 10 had already been appointed before the Israelites' entrance into Canaan. We read in Numbers 34, 17 through 29 this. Now, this is a long passage with a bunch of names, but I just want to read it to you very quickly to show you that there were individuals who were in charge of all these 10 tribes. Numbers 34, 17 through 29. These are the names of the men who shall apportion the land to you for inheritance. And again, this was given by God to Moses before they even crossed the Jordan. So this is at least 7 years earlier. All right, here are the names. Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. Check. They did that. We just read. You shall take one leader of every tribe to apportion the land for an inheritance. For inheritance. These are the names of the men. Of the tribe of Judah, Caleb the son of Jephunneh. Of the tribe of the sons of Simeon, Samuel the son of Amihud. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Eladad the son of Kislon. Of the tribe of the sons of Dan, a leader, Buki, the son of Jogli. Of the sons of Joseph, of the tribe of the sons of Manasseh, a leader, Haniel, the son of Ephod. Of the tribe of the sons of Ephraim, a leader, Kemuel, the son of Shiftan. Of the tribe of the sons of Zebulun, a leader, Elizaphan, the son of Parnach. Of the tribe of the sons of Issachar, a leader, Paltiel, the son of Azan. Of the tribe of the sons of Asher, a leader, Ahahud, the son of Shalomi. Of the tribe of the sons of Naphtali, a leader, Pedahel, the son of Amahud. These are those whom the Lord commanded to apportion the inheritance to the sons of Israel in the land of Canaan. So, there's some real names with some real Jewish names there in charge of this apportionment. All the names are mentioned, of course, so that everybody will know this is done fairly and squarely, and no tribe can say they weren't represented at the apportionment. They had their tribal leader there to look out for their interest and so forth. We go down to verse 2, Joshua 14. It's in the middle of a sentence, so let me go back to verse 1. Eleazar, Joshua, the heads of the tribes, apportioned to Israel for an inheritance. Verse 2, by the lot of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded through Moses, for the 9 tribes and the half tribes. Now, John Gill's got a good speculation as to why God used the lot, or told Joshua to use the lot. The lot, quote, which was done to prevent any future quarrels, animosities, and strifes among the tribes. The disposition being of the Lord, and to show the exact agreement between the lot and the divine predictions by Jacob and Moses. Jacob in Genesis 49 and Moses in Numbers 34, verses 1 through 15. Ed Gill continues, and to make it appear that the division of the land was not owing to the private combination of the above men and their private settlement of it, but to the providence of God, the directors of the lot. Now, the mechanics of how the lottery was done or unknown, as Adam Clark said, and as I just finished saying, the results of the lot did not contradict God's prophecies to Jacob in Genesis 49 when Jacob gave his blessings to the son, to his sons on his deathbed in Egypt. And Moses in Numbers 34, 1 through 15. No contradiction there, which shows that God is in control of the prophecies and the lot. He's in control of the whole situation. Joshua chapter 14, verses 3 through 5. For Moses had given the inheritance of the two tribes and the half-tribe beyond the Jordan, but he did not give an inheritance to the Levites among them. For the sons of Joseph were two tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they did not give a portion to the Levites in the land, except cities to live in, with their pasture lands for their livestock and for their property. Thus the sons of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they divided the land. Now the Levites are mentioned here, and they're mentioned a lot of times in Deuteronomy, and here they're mentioned twice. Why are they mentioned so many times in the description of the distribution? Well, this is to show that Moses is disinterested when he describes in Numbers 34, verses 1 through 15, when he shows where the land is to be distributed. He was saying, look now, I didn't give an inheritance to the Levites. I could have. I'm a Levite myself. I could have given land to myself, but I didn't do it. I am landless except for some cities. My tribe is landless except for some cities and pasture lands around the cities. And of course, the Levites were not going to be supported by agriculture. They were going to be supported by the tithes given by the people. Now, the sons of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded Moses. That was in Numbers 34, 1 through 15, where Moses said, this is where you're all going to go. And the land was divided. A considerable time was needed for survey and measurement. This, of course, is being done before the full conquest had been completed. And actually, the full conquest never was fully completed. They never went all the way up into Lebanon, for example. But nonetheless, the distribution was going to be done. I talked about that in the last audio. Joshua now is old. He's about 100 years old or so, Gil estimates. And he would probably be too old to continue on with the conquest. The sons of Israel would have to do that with other military leaders. And so it's time to distribute the land. We can't wait. It took about 7 years to get the land conquered as well as they did, as we'll see later. We'll calculate that for you. We go now to Joshua 14, verse 6. Then the sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, said to him, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. Now, Joshua has finished. He's gone all the way up to Sidon in his northern campaign, and he's finished all in the north. He's come back to Gilgal, which is right down there, the southern tip of the Dead Sea, on the west side of the Jordan River, where he first crossed over the Jordan, back to his home base camp, in other words. And then they had a little powwow, and Caleb is wanting his land. The sons of Judah drew near to Joshua. That's not the whole tribe, of course. It's only some of its chief men. They wanted to honor Caleb, who was the prince of the tribe, the leader of the tribe. They wanted to second his petition. As Jameson Fawcett Brown said, quote, being one of the nominees appointed to preside over the division of the country, he might have been charged with using his powers as a commissioner to his own advantage. But he urged his request in private, and therefore he took some of his brethren along with him as witness of the justice and propriety of his conduct. That makes a lot of sense, because he's the leader of Judah, and he's asking for special favor about getting that land in Hebron, as we'll see. Whoa, that wouldn't look good, so he brings some people along with him. That's the same thing with church government, Matthew 16 and 18. It's always good to have witnesses. And so Caleb says to Joshua, you know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses concerning you and me, concerning Joshua and Caleb. This is referring to when Moses spoke in Numbers 14, verse 24. But my servant, this is God speaking actually here, but my servant Caleb, because he has had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it. Now, this is at Kadesh Barnea. This is after a couple of years in the wilderness, a year at Sinai, a little bit later, almost 2 years. And they were getting ready to go into the land. You recall, Joshua sent out spies, or Moses sent out spies, two of whom were Joshua and Caleb. They came back and said, let's go get those giants in the land. The other 10 spies says, oh, no, no, they're giants. Our hearts will melt. Our hearts have melted. Their cities are fortified. We can't take them. So when God in Numbers 14:24 says that my servant Caleb has a different spirit, it means he has a different spirit than the 10 cowardly spies. And he has followed me, Yahweh, fully. And so Caleb and his descendants shall take possession of it. And it doesn't say what part of the land he's going to take possession of. We will see that it's Hebron as we go on. Another place where we see that Caleb has a special promise Deuteronomy 1, verse 36. None of the spies are going to see the land, the evil spies that gave the evil report, starting at verse 36, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and to his sons I will give the land on which he has set foot, because he has followed the Lord fully. Now again, God makes no mention of Hebron there, but it was Hebron that's being talked about, because we look at Judges 1:20. Judah gave Hebron to Caleb, just as Moses had promised. So I don't know why Moses didn't mention the particular place, but Moses promised Hebron to Caleb, as we read in Judges 1:20. Then Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak who lived there, and then Caleb got the land. Now Caleb is said to be the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. Well, who is these Kenizzites? Pretty obscure. Easton's dictionary says the name of a tribe referred to in the covenant God made with Abraham. They are not mentioned among the original inhabitants of Canaan, and probably they inhabited some part of Arabia in the confines of Syria. Remember, the Arabian Desert, in ancient geographical terms, came up from Saudi Arabia and then in north into the area between the Jordan River and the Babylonian River, all the way up to Syria. That was considered Arabia. Remember, Paul went to Arabia for 3 years, where he was just right outside Damascus. And so that's definition number one of Kenizzite. Definition number two in Easton says that Kenizzite was a designation given to Caleb, which is not very helpful, but it sounds like he thinks that's a different tribe. So basically, nobody knows who the Kenizzites were. Kadesh Barnea, of course, is the famous place where the spies were sent out from. That's where the entrance into the Holy Land was stopped. The 38 years of wandering in the wilderness started right there at Kadesh Barnea. If I had a map, I would say, and there's a lot of debate about exactly about where this place is, but basically, well, let me just read you what Easton says about Kadesh Barnea, and it also give us a little review of what happened on the Exodus. Kadesh Barnea, it means holy, sacred desert of wandering, a place on the southeastern border of Palestine. So we know it's way down in the Negev and in the southeast, about 165 miles from Horeb, from Mount Sinai. It lay in the wilderness or desert of Zin, and that would be on the edge of the desert of Zin, the southern edge, because it's also on the northern edge of Paran. It's on the border of Eden, Edom. That would be going to the east. Some maps have Edom spilling over from the eastern side of the Araba Valley all the way over to the west. From this place, in compliance with the desire of the people, Moses sent forth 12 spies to spy the land. After examining it in all its districts, the spies brought back an evil report, Joshua and Caleb alone giving a good report of the land. Influenced by the discouraging report, the people abandoned all hope of entering into the promised land. They remained a considerable time at Kadesh, i.e. Kadesh Barnea. Because of their belief, they were condemned by God to wander for 38 years in the wilderness. They took their journey from Kadesh into the deserts of Paran. That's going back south, back toward, by way of the Red Sea. It says in Deuteronomy 2:1, that's back toward the Gulf of Aqaba. One theory is that during these 38 years, they remained in and about Kadesh. In other words, they could have just circled around Kadesh Barnea for 38 years, or they could have gone down to Eilat at the tip of the Gulf of Aqaba and come back. Nobody knows exactly, except they wandered. At the end of these years of wanderings, the tribes were a second time gathered together at Kadesh. During their stay here at this time, Miriam died and was buried. Here the people murmured for want of water, as their forefathers had done formerly at Rephidim. And Moses, irritated by their chidings, with his rod smote the rock twice, instead of speaking to the rock before their eyes, as the Lord had commanded him. Because of this act of his, in which Aaron too was involved, neither of them was to be permitted to set foot within the promised land. The king of Edom would not permit them to pass on through his territory, and therefore they commenced an eastward march and came into Mount Hor. So that's just a summary of all what we've been talking about in these audios as we go through the Torah, the Pentateuch. So Kadesh Barnea was a big deal. That's a place that you really ought to remember. Kadesh Barnea, visit number one. After 2 years in the wilderness, the spies are sent out. Kadesh number two, Miriam dies there. 38 years later, as they prepare to go around Edom, around Moab, through Moab, and across the Jordan River. At the end of the 40 years, we go down to Joshua 14, verses 7 through 10. Caleb is speaking. He's speaking to Joshua. He says, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. And, of course, that was a good word. We can conquer these guys. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me, that's the 10 other cowardly spies, these brethren made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord my God fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live, just as he spoke these 45 years, from the time that the Lord spoke the word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness, and now behold, I am 85 years old today. Now Caleb in verse 9 says, Moses swore on that day, surely the land will be yours. That would be in Deuteronomy 1, verses 34 through 36. Then the Lord heard the sound of your words, and he was angry and took an oath. Not one of these men, that's the Lord, heard the sound of the Israelites' words. God was angry, and he says, verse 35, not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land which I swore to give your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and to his sons I will give the land in which he has set foot, because he has followed the Lord fully. So it's been 45 years since then, and Caleb still remembers that promise, and he recites it back to Joshua. Of course, Joshua was there. He heard that. He knew it. He's not going to complain about it. And as I said, the land we're talking about is Hebron. I hadn't said where Hebron is. If you go south into the Negev, go about a little over halfway down the western coast of the Dead Sea, and then climb the hill, go up to the hill country, headed west. You go a little ways, not too far, and there's Hebron sitting right there in the hill country. Now, where does this 45 years that Caleb has been waiting to get Hebron, where does that come from? Well, nicely, the math works very easily here. In verse 7, Caleb says, I was 40 years old at Kadesh Barnea. Well, at Kadesh Barnea, number one, the first visit at Kadesh Barnea, we know that was 2 years, approximately 2 years after they left Egypt. It took them a year to get to Mount Sinai. It took them almost a year, not quite, to finish setting up the tabernacle. They built the tabernacle during the first year, but then they had to set it up and set up the priestly rituals and such. And then they had to get ready. They had to organize the camp for a march. And then they marched for a couple of months through the wilderness. Anyway, roughly 2 years, they get to Kadesh Barnea the first time. All right, Caleb said he was 40 years old at that time. They wandered 38 years more to give them their 40 years in the wilderness. So Caleb was 40 when they started that 38-year wandering. That's 40 plus 38 is 78 years. And now, in verse 10, Caleb gives another time indicator. He says, Joshua, it's been 45 years from that time at Kadesh Barnea. Well, 40 years plus 38 years of wandering, that's 78. Excuse me, that's 38. 7 years to conquer the land gets you up to 45 years. And that's how you deduce the 7 years it took to conquer the land. Partially conquer the land, of course. And then Caleb says in the last verse, I'm 85 years old today. 40 years he was at Kadesh Barnea the first time. 38 more years in the wilderness, that's 78 years old. 7 years to conquer the land with Joshua, that's 85 years. Oh, that's how old he was. Getting a little up there, long in the tooth. We know Joshua is roughly 100. Gil, you don't know for sure, but Gil says Joshua was about 100. So these are some old men that are talking here. We go now to Joshua 14, verses 11 and 12. Caleb is speaking. He says, I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now, for war and for going out and coming in. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. Again, he's talking about Hebron. For you heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. Now, I didn't mention that Hebron, of course, was the famous burial place for Abraham and his relatives. Sarah was buried there. Rachel was not. Rebekah was, if I remember correctly. Joseph was not. His bones were carried up from Egypt. I forgot where he was buried, but he wasn't there. But most of the, it was the patriarchal gravesite. So it's very famous because of that. And the city is still there. It's one of the oldest cities in the world, like Hebron and Gaza and Damascus. Now, Caleb mentions in verse 11, I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. That's when he's still as strong when he's 85 as he was when Moses sent him as a spy when he was 40. Well, now that's not bad to say you're strong at 85. I've dealt with some 85 years old plus people, and they're not strong at all. And I'm 70, and I don't feel as strong as I was when I was at 40, but not Caleb. He mentioned that, probably, to encourage Joshua to give him the land. Joshua might have feared that Caleb couldn't conquer it, so why should Joshua give it to him? Especially since the inhabitants were giants, the Anakim. The Anakim are mentioned here in verse 12. The Anakim were there, and their cities were fortified, that means with walls, to withstand siege equipment, which the Israelites didn't have any of. So yeah, he needed to tell Joshua, I'm strong, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get this place. Let's talk about the Anakim. Anytime you see Anakim, think Rephaim, Anakim, Emim, Zamzumin. Anytime you see those words, just think giants. And perhaps Nephilim, too. Those are earlier in Genesis 6. That's the easiest. That's all you need to remember. They had different names depending on who was naming them. I think Ammon called them Zamzumin. The Moabites called them Emim. Here they're called Anakim. And in one place it says they're the same as the Rephaim. People dispute whether they're the Nephilim of Genesis 6. But at any rate, they're giants, and Caleb is trying to convince Joshua to let him have that land so he can go in and take the giants. Take them on. The hill country, here's what Gill says about that. Quote, the mountainous part of the country, the hill country of Judea, in which Hebron, Debir, and other cities were. For it was not one particular city only that Caleb requested, but a large tract of ground. If you'll look at the map, as you're heading west from Hebron, you'll end up in that hill, that spine of hills that runs all the way from south to north in the middle of the Promised Land. Now, Joshua says he's not only strong, Caleb says he's not only strong for war, he's strong for going out and coming in. That's the Hebrew expression for doing normal business activities, normal daily activities, going out, coming in. I think it's a pretty good metaphor. I like to pray for people that way. Bless their going out and their coming in. In other words, to do any civil business, for example, maybe presiding over his tribe, Caleb, over the tribe of Judah, or to govern any city within the confines of the tribe of Judah, he's strong enough to do that too. Military, political, judicial functions, 85, no problem. Now he says here in verse 12 to Joshua, perhaps, Caleb says, perhaps the Lord will be with me. Well, that doesn't sound like he has a lot of faith. However, the translation is misleading. The NIV translates it as the Lord being with me, or the Lord helping me, I should say. The Lord helping me, which is much more positive. Here's what John Gill says, quote, Caleb spoke not as doubting of his presence, of God's presence and power to be with Caleb, to be with him and to assist him, but as placing his confidence therein, his confidence in God, and distrusting his own power and ability, having no dependence on that, but believing that the Lord, or as the Targum, the word of the Lord, would be with him for his help. So perhaps that's not really good translation, I don't think. Now we have one more problem before we leave verse 12. Caleb confidently predicts to Joshua that he's going to drive the Anakim out of Hebron. But the problem is there shouldn't be any Anakim left in Hebron because of Joshua 11:22, 7 years and several chapters back during Joshua's southern campaign. After that campaign, it says in Joshua 11:22, there were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel. Only in Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod some remained. Well, how do you explain that? If there are no Anakim left, how come they were there at Hebron when Caleb has got to go beat them? Well, here's how you answer that in Joshua chapters 10 and 11, when Joshua 10, basically, when Joshua had whooped up on the Anakim. The Anakim left the area of Hebron and Debir and Anab there in the hill country, and they fled west and went to the Philistine cities of Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod. Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod. The Anakim fled there, and so Hebron was clean of Anakim for a while, but this is 7 years later after that first initial conquest by Joshua. 7 years later, when Caleb wants to go in and take it, the Anakim have come out of their caves and gone back to Hebron and the surrounding area. So that would explain as to why Caleb had to do another conquest of those stubborn Anakim. We go now to Joshua 14, verses 13 through 15, and we'll finish this audio. So Joshua blessed Caleb, and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, for Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. Now how did Joshua bless Caleb? Here's Clark's speculation. Quote, this quote, may mean the praise bestowed on Caleb's intrepidity and faithfulness by Joshua, as well as a prayer to God that he might have prosperity in all things, and especially that the Lord might be with him. I suspect the blessing consisted of the fact that Joshua gave him Hebron. That's it, as well as these other things that Clark mentions. Now, Caleb got Hebron, not the city itself, because the city was given to the Levites as a city of refuge. Now, the Levites also got some pasture land around their cities, too. But this apparently refers to the fields and the villages even outside the pasture land of the Levitical cities. Joshua 21:12, but the fields of the city and its villages they gave to Caleb the son of Jephunneh as his possession. Now, Caleb kept that, at least, kept that area around Hebron until this day. That is, phrase is repeated over and over in the book of Joshua. That means until the date that the book was composed. Some people say when Joshua was old. Some people say it's not Joshua that wrote it, but Samuel, maybe Eli, I think, as some people speculate. Doesn't matter. Here, Caleb is said to have been blessed with Hebron and surrounding areas because he followed the Lord of God Israel, the Lord God of Israel, fully. Now, there's a difference between following God partially and following God fully. It's a good application point here. If you want to get blessed, follow the God fully. If you want to just get saved and go to heaven and get blessed in the afterlife, but meanwhile live a horrible, terrible, miserable existence on earth, follow the Lord partially. It's our choice. It's your choice. It's everybody's choice. This following the Lord God fully is mentioned here in verse 14. It's also mentioned twice in two other places in Joshua chapter 14. In chapter 8, it's mentioned, nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I follow the Lord my God fully. In verse 9, it's mentioned, so Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Three times in this chapter 14, Caleb is said to have followed the Lord his God fully. All right, some minor details. We'll finish up this chapter. How about the name of Hebron? In verse 15, it says the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba. Well, where did the current name of Hebron come from? It could have been named later, actually, not now, but later after a descendant of Caleb. We read in 1 Chronicles 2:42, the sons of Caleb were Mesha, his firstborn. That's Caleb's son. Mesha was the father of Ziph. That's Caleb's grandson. And the son of Ziph was Maresha, Caleb's great-grandson. And Maresha was the father of Hebron, Caleb's great-great-grandson. So it could be. But at any rate, at some point in its history, the city of Hebron had a name of Kiriath Arba, which literally means city of the four. Kiriath is city, Arba is four. Probably it refers to Anak and his three sons. Joshua 15:14, Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak. Of course, Anak is one of the Anakim, a giant. So these giants' three sons, Shishai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. So that could have been where the name came from, city of the four. Now, verse 15 of the chapter ends with this phrase, then the land had rest from war. The land was said to have rest after Joshua's initial conquest, the southern and northern Canaanite campaigns that we read about in Genesis chapter 10, Genesis 11. And so he finished those campaigns. But again, that was just the initial campaigns. They still had seven more years after that of conquering to do. But anyway, in Joshua 11:23, the land had rest from war. Now we're 7 years later. Caleb knocks out Hebron. It says the land had rest from war. Now what that means is there are no more general wars over the whole land. Each individual tribe had to fight particular wars to win their inheritance. And so this rest from war was not absolute and universal. It just means there was no national campaign by Joshua and all the troops of Israel trying to wipe out the Canaanite kings. That was over with. Now its individual tribal leaders had to try to get their particular inheritance and clean up pockets of resistance within their allotted boundaries. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished. Chapter 14 of Joshua, the inheritance west of the Jordan. And the next two chapters, Joshua 15:1 through 16:10, we're going to look at the allotments for Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh. Those are going to be very shortly summarized, a lot of geography. We've covered so much geography already that we're just going to give a summary of what Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh got. I hope you stay tuned for that short audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.